Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 29 for December 31st, 2013. I'm your host, Jack. Please check out the website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me voice messages if you would wish to do so at 724-701-0550. If you have questions or ideas for future shows, by all means, get those in to me. You can email those or voicemail them, but you can email those to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And please follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. I'd like to say Happy New Year's Eve to everybody out there. And this is a week away from when we celebrated Christmas Eve, and people said, boy, Jack, it was nice that you put a show out on Christmas Eve there for you, or the holiday Eve, whatever holiday you were celebrating. And that's the name of the game. I've been doing this for a long time, and my wife is very much supportive of me doing these shows, and she knows that we have things to talk about weekly, and it's very important to get a show out there to you. So today we are going to be talking about VPNs, or virtual private networks. And we're going to be talking about these things. I'm going to discuss different ways with you, my opinions on it, as I always give you different opinions. And we'll try to bring some light into VPNs if you've never used them, and try to help you through the confusing turmoil, I can say, because it's pretty confusing, a VPN and how they work, to maybe allow you to gain some more control or more remote access to your network, because none of us, believe me, want to wake up at 3 in the morning, have to drive to the office to reboot. Well, maybe you have to reboot a server, but let's say you have to fix a user account or change a password on an email or something. You don't have to remote in for, or you don't have to want to drive in for that. We want to do it from the comfort of our own home, right? Sitting in our pajamas, you know, because technology, you know, on the hindsight of things, unless you're the CEO of Yahoo, remember when the female took over, and granted, she did a really nice job with Flickr.com. It's beautiful, and I love it. She did a really amazing shit job to people out there everywhere that was remoting in from home to do their work, because I think people are more adapt to get more work done, and you'll work more hours if you can work from home. That is why allowing VP access to your network, and you know, especially if you have workers, mobile workers, and if you can get them to their desktop from their comfort of their kitchen table on their laptop, or if you can get them into your servers to do work, maybe not so much email anymore because all that's web-based now. So I don't really do that for email. But let's say there's an application that maybe they can run some reports or write some reports for you or something that they would normally do at their desk. If you can give them access to their desk from anywhere in the world, you're going to gain a better, more focused employee. Because I know I do stuff from home. And there's times I'll tell my work, I'll say, look, I'm going to go home and do my rest of the day at home because I could be more focused and I can do more things at home because I don't have the phone ringing and the people coming in my office saying, hey, Jack, what about this? And it's just a better way to do things. And we do that by means of VPN. Now, I know you're saying already, Jack, wait, we have remote desktop and we can remote into our servers whenever we feel like it. That's okay. But you want that private network. You want that tunnel in to keep you secure and keep all your information secure using that secure pipeline. And I'll explain that just in a minute here to allow you to gain access to your servers without just being out there in the open. I think that's a pretty unsafe way of doing things. Now, why is it important to have remote access? We just said we can talk about that over and over, allowing your employees to be more more workaholics, let's call it. They're going to just work more. They're going to give you more hours, and you know, now you can comp them, and I would suggest that. Comp those people some time. Say, hey, look, on Friday, we noticed you've been working pretty hard from home, so on Friday, kick off at noon and take off. Leave the office. People today, especially old CEOs, like the lady that took over Yahoo, you know, older CEOs that don't understand that maybe she should read, you know, the book, The World is Flat. She should read that book because it explains to you that anymore, we don't have to sit in an office. And I still am amazed on how many offices are still open out there, how many places are still running. Because server people like us, technologists, we will still have a job. It may look different. You may go into a central place somewhere. Our servers might be sitting at a server, cloud-based server somewhere, where we don't have to go into an office. We don't want our people coming in. Look at the money you would save just on the things like electric. You know, people go in, and it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, but a lot of times I see it at our place. People go into work, and they spend 2 hours a day socializing. They're not working. If they're remoted in, their friends aren't going to be sitting in their house with them probably, so they can remote in. But people get this, old CEOs get this concept of, oh, they're not going to do anything. They'll be doing their laundry and working, and they'll be doing the dishes and working, and they'll be mowing the grass if it's, you know, some guys mowing the grass and working and yelling at the kids and working. But here's the main thing, folks. They're working. Now, why else is it important outside of that to have remote access to your servers and to your network? Because it's your peace of mind. It's you being the one out there saying, you know, you're getting up at 3 in the morning, you get that call. And I had that call before from a CEO. Jack, it seems like my email's stuck and it's not going. I'm like, well, first of all, I thought, why is this guy sending email at 3 o'clock in the morning? But I thought, you know what, that's one of my bosses. He's a CEO and we need to take care of him. So I went in and I VPN'd into my server and I seen what the issue was, why the email wasn't flowing. And I was able to restart the mail services. When we used, you know, mail an Exchange server, you know, we've long adapted now to Google Apps, and we got away from all that that ISP stuff. I don't do that anymore. But I was able to get the email server restarted and get him his email flowing, and he was a very happy man. Actually, he gave me a whole Friday off for that, so I thought that was pretty impressive. Now, how can you set up a VPN? Well, you could do it in a number of ways. There's tons of ways we can set up VPN access for this virtual private network. Now, I'm going to run through these. These are my typical ways of doing things and the ways I've been doing it for years. You could either follow along and say, Jack, that's a great way, or maybe you have a better way. And if you have a better way, you know, when you listen to this show, and there's a lot of you out there listening, and I appreciate you being here. If you have a better way or a suggestion, don't be afraid to jot that down in email. You know, just send it over to me, jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And I will bring your vision to light. We will bring your vision because I'm not the last soothsayer of sage, the all-knowing, the all-whatever, you know, person on any of this technology. I believe we're all in this together. The whole idea to me is networking, and networking is not just computer networking. Networking is human beings, technologists networking together for the greater good of technology, and I think that's really important. That's why I started these shows. I wanted to bring you some ideas, but I would like to get your feedback, and I don't really always get that. Some of you have emailed me, and I appreciated that, but some are just sitting there listening going, I really don't have anything to say. You do. You do have something to say. Just think about it a little bit and drop me a line. Okay. Now, the first thing you can do, the lowest case denominator of any VPN, is you can set VPN access up on your servers. Windows servers have had VPN built into them for a long, long time. Is it the easiest thing to set up in the world? Probably not compared to some of the others I've set up. We set up for one small business at one point, and the small business had maybe about 5 workstations. They had 5 workers, 1 server. So it was pretty much an easy thing to set up. They had a DSL line coming in for their internet, so it was a real small business. And we set up VPN access on their server. That allowed them to gain access to their workstations, to their computers. We set up so they can go through that server, hit the VPN. They became part of their network, and then they used remote desktop connections to their computers, brought that up on their home computers, and they were able to get in there and do some work. Now, I don't recommend this access. This is one of those ones I'm not recommending. You can do it. It's the lowest case denominator. It's one of the cheapest because you already have a server obviously running. So it's not that hard to set up. It could be touchy because of the firewall issues, but once you get it running and get it set up and allowing it to accept connections, I mean, you're using your Active Directory for your LDAP, so people will be able to come in and authenticate. So it's all there already. But it means that you have to open up a permanent hole in your firewall. So that means you have to open up ports in that firewall, in and out, to allow that VPN traffic. Whenever I open a hole in my firewall, I have to worry about hackers. I have to think there's people out there that's going to probe my network somehow once they find out that that hole is open. Now, with that said, it can be done, and you have to understand a firewall, and God only hopes you have a firewall on your network. Even if you have a DSL modem or a cable modem, and you have a business network, you need to have some kind of firewall in place. It just makes sense to do so because you're protecting your data. Your data is, to me, just as important. If I was the Ford Motor Company and I'm designing a new car, and I have that car, you know, drawn out, and all of a sudden Chevy comes in there, hacks my server, and takes the design, and 2 months later they have one rolling off their assembly line, and it was one of your ideas. So it's the idea of that business owner, it's the idea of that person, whatever, if you're a consultant, it's the idea that you're protecting that person's private thoughts or private practices, and that's really, really extremely important. Now, my very favorite to set up, and the one I've used a lot, and I really enjoy using it, it's pretty easy to do, is to set up your VPN tunnel on your firewall. Now, this is a little different than punching holes through the firewall and giving people access to probe it, because you have to make the VPN connection at the firewall, okay? So when you come in and you go to connect to your firewall or your VPN, you're making a connection at the front door on your firewall itself. Now, Cisco makes it pretty easy to set up a VPN, and then you can use what is called Cisco Connect. It's just a little VPN Connect client you put on your computer, and I found it for Mac, and I found it for Windows, and what it does is you put your IP address in there, and it allows you to take that home computer or that mobile computer and make it a part of the work network. And it works really good. The only thing I found that Cisco makes it a little hard, you got to be careful with, and I'm not even sure to this day really how to set it up. But where we'd have trouble is once we connected to our network and we became part of that network, we didn't have the proper tunnels set up to allow us to have internet access with our workstation. So when I was sitting here at my desk working on my own personal computer, I didn't have access to be able to go out to the internet to search anything. And that did become a problem. So I would say there's probably workarounds, and I know there's tunnels that you can write, and I'm sure I just didn't have it written properly. But it didn't bother us because most of the stuff we VPN'd in for was to allow us to work on something on the network or to allow that user to gain access to their workstation, not so much worried about, you know, they were using stuff in the network anyway, not worried about stuff on the internet. And to get on the internet, all they have to do is they would have to disconnect the VPN and bring up their local internet on their computer. Now, there's also some dedicated VPN hardware devices out there. I've seen many of them. I think Cisco even makes one. And, you know, I'm just kind of a Cisco firewall type guy. Once I get beyond the firewall, I mean, everything else, I mean, Cisco's been buying pretty much everything else up, but I mean, we have some HP switches. We had some Linksys switches in our network, but Cisco has since bought them up. If you didn't know that, quite a while ago. And so there's other solutions out there, but Cisco is just one of those ones that I've worked with over the years and over the decades. I kind of get used to programming, so it's kind of why I use that front-end devices. But there's a lot of companies out there that make these VPN hardware devices that you can use, and they're dedicated VPN boxes. Now, I would suggest if you buy one of these VPN hardware devices, make sure you place it before your firewall. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to make a connection to the VPN box, whatever that device you buy. Then from that box, your next network cable will go from that box to your firewall. And then it will go through that firewall through one of the ports. You open up the proper ports through one of the physical ports and then go and dump into one of your switches and get you into the network. It's just an extra layer of security. You can never have too much security when you're talking about opening firewalls and opening holes in VPN access. The virtual private network, remember folks, this is your tunnel through the internet. So it's a pipe. I've always explained it as being a virtual pipe. Your traffic's inside the pipe. Everything else is flowing on the outside of that pipe. But once you get into the network, now you're in your network, right? The pipe is kind of opened up. Think of this as like a tunnel. If you've ever driven through a tunnel when you're going into a city or you're going down the turnpike, when you go in, you're inside that tunnel, you're safe, right? It won't rain on you. There's no wind that's going to blow your car around. Nothing's going to happen. Once you go on the other side, you're back out of the other side of the tunnel. So you are good to go. And you're going to start getting all those effects again that you had before. So that is why the idea of putting your VPN device before your firewall makes really good sense to me. Now, the last way we're going to discuss today is the easiest I have ever seen in the history of VPNs. I mean, I can set this thing up in 5 minutes and it works flawlessly. It's really amazing. You may have your reserves about security. I have my thoughts of security, but this is one way of doing it that makes it really easy, and it's a perfect way to do it. And all you do is go to logmein.com and search for a program called Hamachi. Not hibachi like the Chinese or Japanese restaurant cooking. It's Hamachi. It's Hamachi. I had a friend tell me about this, and he said, Jack, this is the greatest thing since VPNs. You're going to love it. And I said, what? And I hooked it up and set up. I said, how in the heck do you use it? I was lost. I said, I couldn't figure out how to make my connection get to my servers. But all this thing is, folks, is you put this little small footprint client on each one of your servers that you want to have access to. And there's a client that you load on your home computer. When you open the client up, it's going to give you that work computer. You'll see the servers. Let's say it's my server. Okay, so let's list as my server. And it's going to give you a IP address. Now, here's the kicker. You're going to say, I don't know what that IP address is. That doesn't make any sense. That's not one of my IP addresses. It's not. It's a virtual network using the IP scheme of LogMeIn. It's some scheme that they set up. So you take that IP address and copy that and put that into your remote desktop software or whatever. And when you hit connect, pow, it connects you right into that server through that virtual IP address. It's a really, really amazing piece of machine. It works absolutely flawlessly. And if you want to, you can set this up. You can go out there and you can set this up and put on each computer and you can teach people how to use it. We've went another route. We've actually used LogMeIn, just the actual desktop LogMeIn client for a couple of our workers that need remote access because they need access to their computers at different times of the day and the night. So they just go to logmein.com and they can remote right to their desktop. And remember, it's free. You can use that for absolutely no money down, and it doesn't cost you a nickel, and it's going to make you look like a hero. Now, once again, you don't have to worry about any firewalls, and you don't have to worry about opening correct ports, because LogMeIn just works, and the Hamachi kind of just does it for you. So that is also my number one pick for small business, and it's also free, as I said, for up to so many computers. So if you have mobile workers out there that must access applications on your network, I would most likely suggest, I'm talking if you have a bigger network, not just one of these small businesses, because remember, the small business, I would suggest the Hamachi. Okay, it just works very easily and it's simple to use. But if you have a larger network and you have mobile clients out there, let's just say like we said, for instance, the Yahoo. Okay, now in that instance, and we work with a couple other software vendors, that they a lot of them work from home, I would suggest to use a dedicated piece of hardware and create at that point your VPN off that dedicated piece of hardware, because you have a lot more control over it, and it's actually better and it's easier to limit access times. Because sometimes in a business, I know with our past CEO, he said, look, Jack, this VPN stuff is really great and I love it. It works great for us. But I feel that we shouldn't allow, just like you lock the business doors at some point, I feel that we should not allow anybody to have access to our servers on the weekends. Our workers should make sure they have the weekends off to relax with their families. It's very, very important. So that's when we take and we limit that access time. Now, one of the main issues to be connected when setting up, let me see here what I heard, I'm sorry. One of the main issues to be concerned with when setting up a VPN access is to make sure you have all other ports on your network closed that you don't want to use. We talked about that a few weeks ago about closing down port 25 because we don't run a mail server any longer. Your mail server, for peace of mind, and get if you're a network administrator, I know a few guys, well, I know a lot of network administrators, and a few of them have this mindset. This is the mindset. I have to be in control of my network all the time. I am the superior god of my network. Did anybody see how that worked out in the movie Hackers? And if you haven't seen the movie Hackers, I suggest you go find it. I don't know if it's on Netflix or not, but find it and watch it. Because there was a guy with that mindset, superior god. He ran everything and he knew everything and he didn't want anybody else to really know much about it. But here is the reason, is because he was on the inside doing bad things. So he didn't want anybody to see that he was doing bad things. So take those extra ports, whatever you're not using, and you close those off because you don't want your network probed. If you have this VPN access open up, you don't want it probed. Another good thing to remember that we missed one time, several years ago when I set up a VPN access for a company, was if your company lets someone go, if it's an involuntary leaving of the company, they got fired, canned, kicked out of the company, then you need to make sure that you take that VPN access off that person immediately. You shut down their email account. You shut down their VPN access. You shut down their server. If they're on your Active Directory and you know they were fired, they're not coming back. Don't disable the account. Delete the account. Delete their email accounts. Close that person out of your building. It's just like, and this is what happens. So many companies out there take and they go out and they'll say, hey, you're fired. Give me your keys. And they get the keys, but they leave the virtual doors open. Wow, what a mistake. And we made that mistake once. And we had somebody go in there and they wanted to screw with the company. So they remoted in and they just started deleting all of their work they've done over the years. And remember, when you work for a company, and I did this once. And let's say you work for a company as a software engineer and you write software when you're at that business, at that company. That software belongs to them, even though it could be your intellectual idea, because I did it. Mine drafted my software. And when I left the company, I was asked, did you write any part of that software on any device that the company owns? Now, this is a catcher here, folks. If you wrote that software on a laptop, that is their property. Now, it might be your intellectual property because you designed it and created it, but the software now belongs to the company. So when I was asked, Jack, from the job I have now, Jack, do you want us to buy your home computer? Because we know you're remote in, we know you do work, and we will buy you a home computer that you can use to do that. I said no. I declined it. I went out and I purchased my own. I actually use an iMac for all these shows. And I do some photography work and video editing. So I bought my own iMac. And my wife said, well, why'd you do that? Because they said they would buy it for you. And I said, well, they did. But anything I create, just like when I'm creating this podcast today on this computer, they would own that podcast. They would own everything I've done, all my YouTube videos and everything. They would own that stuff. I don't want anybody to own my intellectual property. Like I said, I did that years ago writing that software. So what happened was the guy felt that, hey, he worked in that business for all those years. And he did all that damn work. He went in and he VPN'd in because we didn't have him shut down because he got fired at the end of the day on Friday. We all went home. We were happy for the weekend. We came back in Monday and found all his user folders empty. He copied everything back to his own home computer, everything that he'd done. He was in a PR division, so he was doing all the press stuff for the company, and he took everything he created, all the slogans he wrote, whatever, and he deleted everything. So the new guy that got hired, I mean, had nothing to start with over the years, nothing there. So that is why you want to make sure not only do you close the ports, but if you have anybody in your company that left, even if they leave voluntarily, shut everything off, get rid of them. They're leaving your company. They don't want to work with you no more. They shouldn't have access to your virtual doors. Don't leave those open. Well, folks, I hope I've covered a lot of information here for you today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope to get your feedback. I think that's the big thing with these shows. I want your feedback. And, you know, I've been trying to find a way or trying to think of a way to do a live show. I do a live photography show on Sunday mornings, and I've been doing that for so many years now that the time zone stuck. But trying to find a time and drill down a time to do a show like this where I'd have a lot of you out there available to sit down and listen and watch and maybe get in a chat room and talk back and forth, I haven't really drilled that down. So that's why it's a podcast. I did some. You'll see some of the videos from this show on YouTube, and not all of them, because sometimes I don't, and I just heard this phrase the other day, and I thought it caught me as being dead on. Why do so many podcasters do video when all it is a talking head? Anybody ever remember Max Headroom? I don't know how old people are listening to this show, but Max Headroom was one of like kind of the first virtual talking heads. So a video, you see me with headphones on, I look kind of silly. I'm sitting with a microphone, boom, a mic in front of my face, and you see me reading basically off my show notes and going over this stuff. I don't think that's really interesting unless you have a chat room going and people want to ask you live questions maybe. That's why this show, the podcast, just works. And that's why I do this. But I hope everyone out there has a great, great start to this new year coming up, 2014. I'm sure, and I feel very positive, and I've been doing this, folks, for almost 25 years, this business. I feel very positive that this will be the year of the techie. I can see, I can envision more and more jobs coming open and more chances, even more than ever, for consultants out there. And you know why I say that? Because I've been getting consultant calls like crazy. I have a full-time day job in this business. I work, you know, 7 to 3, Monday through Friday. A lot of virtual time at home, remoting in. My wife says, you're always doing something for work. But then I get a lot of these places to call and say, Jack, can you do some consulting work for me? Can you remote in and work on a server? Can you remote in and run a report for me? Can you help me out? And just the other day, I was in the car going to a business working with them. Here's what I see, and this is why I say this. Most companies out there, their computer systems are 10 years or older. They are dragging. Also remember, in 2014, Windows XP support is gone, folks. It's out of here. These companies have to upgrade, and if they're not, they're setting themselves up for viruses and vulnerabilities. You're going to be the one they're going to call. So you are going to make some money this year as a consultant, or there will be day jobs coming. Because businesses are the same way. A lot of businesses got their network set up, and once everything was set up, what they decided to do was cut the tech people. It seems like the tech people are the first to go. One of the most needed people in your everything runs on computer systems. God, we know that, right? That's why we're listening to Tips from the Server Room to begin with. We know it runs here. We do this job every day. But people always want to go in. They just want to cut the tech guys. They're the most expensive. We don't need them. Computers are running good. We have software. Get rid of them. And then what happens is, uh-oh. Hey, that big box in the back room there with no air conditioning just, you know, basically blew out. And no computers will log on. Guess they should have kept the tech guy, huh? Because it sounds to me like their server might have overheated and blew out. So this will be the year, folks. If you're looking for jobs, make sure you get out there. Start getting your resumes put together. Get them tuned up. Don't be afraid. And I tell my guys this at work. Don't be afraid to send a resume out. When some PR person out there, some PR person out there writes up an ad and, you know, or I mean HR person writes up this ad, and I've had this happen to me. We want somebody with a master's degree and a PhD, and we're paying $35,000 a year. And what happens is they don't know what they want. They read other people's ads and they build an ad, and it's all HR people writing these ads ordinarily. So you send your resume in because you have your associate's degree or you have your bachelor's degree, right? That's what most of us are carrying around, just a bachelor's degree. And what happens is they look at that and it's like, oh, you don't have a master's or a PhD. I don't want him. How much do you think a master's or a PhD is worth today? It's worth a hell of a lot more than $35,000. I hope. In our local industry here, I'm just going to give you a short story. We had a guy that just took a job as a systems administrator. A network systems administrator, director is what his real title is, network systems director. He took it for $40,000 a year. And that may sound like a lot of money to some of you out there, but in our area where I live and in our field, a network director, a technology director, I mean, you are talking in the upwards of $80,000 to $100,000 a year you can make. Right, that's what they should have, but he lowballed it. So what I'm saying is, if you're out there, I know you need jobs. If you're out of work for a while, I know you need money. I think it's very pressing to have the cash flow to take care of your families, but be careful and don't lowball, because you're taking the whole entire computer industry down to a level where we don't want to sink. We are valuable people, and you have to keep your values. That is really, really important. And this is the year of the techie, 2014. Folks, if you'd like to hear me rambling on some more and like to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, it's still very valuable out there. A lot of companies are still running it. Or Windows Server 2012. And I also teach VMware ESXi Server. And I teach all these from A to Z. So this is stuff, even if you've learned this before, you had this in school and you said, hey, Jack, I know all that stuff. Great. That's wonderful, but it's always good to get a refresher, and this can't hurt you to get this refresher. It's a very, very low cost. I have these as online courses. There's a lot of people in there. I've had hundreds of people signing up for these courses, and they're extremely pleased. And if my predictions are right, you're going to want more stuff on your resume, because these techie jobs are coming open. The technology field is going to open up this year. You want to be prepared. So take one of these online courses, and you can find those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the online class links at the top of the page. I can't stress it enough. The courses are self-paced. You watch a video, and you take a 2 or 3 question quiz, and don't let that quiz bother you. That's just to allow you to know that that information is sinking into your head. Because I still take online classes. I mean, why wouldn't you? You always got to learn more, right? We can never know everything and have it stick, so we need to learn more. Once you complete this course, I do mail you a certificate, and I've had a couple very happy students actually email me and said, Jack, thank you very much. They felt that it helped them to get the job that they have today in the server industry. So, you know, it's a nice way. And I set those up, and some people email me and said, Jack, those are too cheap. They must not be any good. I did that because, remember, folks, I have a day job, just like doing tipsfromtheserverroom.com for free. I want to pay it forward. And this is a way to pay it forward and help you folks out there. Maybe you're new to networking. Maybe you're new to servers. Or maybe you're an old dog like me. You've been around forever, but you just want to get some refreshers. That's what those courses are for. So sign up today at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Can't stress that enough. Folks, have a great work week. Maybe you're off all this week. I don't know. Hopefully you are. And we will be back here next Tuesday with another show of Tips from the Server Room. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for subscribing and downloading these shows. I really appreciate it. I would also appreciate it if you're going to buy any server stuff or computers or networking gear, anything. If you're going to buy a box of diapers, or if you're going to buy some end dust to dust your house and you're buying it from Amazon, please use my Amazon link at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. or jackstechcorner.com. If you have an ad blocker, you want to shut that off so you can see the ad. But just bookmark that and use my Amazon links because it really helps the show out. It keeps my websites going, and I don't have to tell you what else it keeps going. Hey, a couple dollars, you know, in the bank there, it does help to pay all the bills that we got going with this stuff. So thanks, everyone, for joining me here, and I will talk to you next week on Tips from the Server Room. I am Jack. Have a great new year. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.